Hello and welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday the 25th of June 2024. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Margaret Simpson and Diane Sider and read by Hazel Hobbs and Rosemary Shergold. The copying and distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful, and the technical officer, that's me, is David Field. Today sunrise is at 4:45 and sunset is at 9:30. And the next few days are going to be warmer than average, which makes a nice change.
Blenheim Palace in Woodstock hosted D-Day anniversary events alongside thousands of other commemorations in Oxfordshire. The Duke of Marlborough and civic dignitaries, including the Lord Lieutenant, attended the event on the evening of Thursday, June the 6th, which included speeches and the lighting of the beacon. The event was held in partnership with Oxfordshire County Council, Oxford City Council and West Oxfordshire District Council, and was also open to locals in the Woodstock area around the palace. Events across the country have marked 80 years since the D-Day landings, when Allied forces landed on the Normandy coast in France in the Second World War.
Relics of human space exploration will be showcased at an exhibition which will start a 5-year tour in Henley. The Space Vault exhibition will start its tour around the UK and Europe at the River and Rowing Museum from the 1st of July after a run at the European Space Agency in Harwell. It offers a chance to see one of the UK's largest private collections of space artefacts, which include objects from NASA's Apollo missions, the Soviet space era and SpaceX. Visitors will travel through 11 curated stories of human space exploration using visuals and artefacts. Highlights include Apollo 13's mission checklists, lunar dust from Apollo 15's landing site and x-rays of Neil Armstrong's spacesuit gloves. There will also be Commander Dave Scott's spacesuit umbilical, through which he communicated his first words as he stepped onto the surface of the moon. The exhibition also includes talks from historians of human spaceflight, designers of robotics for lunar exploration, and astronomers. Steve O'Connor, director of the Riving and Rowing Museum, said, "We can't wait to launch the Space Vault exhibition at our museum. This unique exhibit offers an unparalleled opportunity for our visitors to experience the awe-inspiring history and future of space exploration up close and discover Oxfordshire's importance in the UK space industry. Henley and the surrounding areas are rich with compelling stories, and we're committed to opening up those stories to an even broader audience."
An overweight cat who lives with his owner in Banbury has been losing weight with a very unusual treatment. 9-year-old Moses has been undergoing hydrotherapy treatment at Avonvale Veterinary Centres in Wellesbourne, Warwickshire. Avonvale's veterinary hydrotherapist, Olivia Stokes, initially encountered resistance from Moses. She said, "When he first came to us, Moses was nearly 10 kilograms in weight." His owner said he had been on diets and been encouraged to exercise before, but had still not been able to lose weight. So we decided to try a different approach with hydrotherapy. It's a very unusual approach in caring for cats. I've been in the industry for 5 years and a qualified hydrotherapist for almost 2 years, and I have never experienced hydro with a cat before. This is because cats don't usually like water, and sure enough, on his first taster session, Moses was not impressed at all. Miss Stokes had to gradually introduce Moses to the process, sometimes without water, to get him used to the treadmill. But with time and patience, Moses started to accept and respond to the therapy. Miss Stokes continued, "Fast forward down the line, and Moses now sits in the tank as I increase the water level, then knows exactly what to do. Once he's been walking for 13 minutes, I then lift him up, raise the water level further and swim him for a couple of minutes to give him a full body workout. Moses weighed 9.7 kilos at his heaviest, but came in at 9.1 kilo during his most recent weigh-in. Miss Stokes said, "That's a loss in body weight of almost 4% in about 6 weeks, which is perfect as we don't want to lose the weight too quickly." Moses' owner, Jenna Joshi, who lives in Banbury and is a clinical nursing manager at Avonvale, said, "Moses has always been a big cat, but had gained a lot of weight over the last 3 years. I'd been keeping him on a strict diet, but this didn't help at all. He was just not interested in going outside, exercising, or playing with toys. I asked my colleagues at Avonvale whether we could try hydrotherapy to help his mobility and, hopefully, help him lose some weight." She continued, "I could see a difference almost straight away. After his first hydro session, he came through the cat flap, which he hadn't done in a long time. We're still having regular weight checks, still doing hydrotherapy, and making good progress. It was difficult at first, but now he doesn't complain and knows exactly what he needs to do."
A railway centre has welcomed descendants of Isambard Kingdom Brunel to lay one of the first plinth stones for a reconstructed station building. Didcot Railway Centre hosted Brunel's great-great-great-grandson, Jim Noble, as well as his son, Zeb. Mr. Noble was considered the ideal person to perform this role for the Brunel-inspired 1850s station building. Hayford's station building is based on Brunel's design for the station at Box near Bath in Somerset. Hayford Station was donated to Didcot Railway Centre in 1986, whose volunteers had to dismantle it, remove it from sight, and in the last few years, volunteers have worked to finally reconstruct the building in its new home. After 3 years of clearing and preparing the ground, casting the reinforced concrete foundations, and installing ducts and pipes for services, the building is now starting to rise above ground level. The plinth stones are newly cut stone, as the originals were so big they had to be left in the ground when the station was demolished. These newer stones, cut in the style of the originals, allow for more modern adjustments, such as damp-proof courses, to be effective. The stone laying is being undertaken by a contractor, who will be working with the volunteer team over the summer months. Jim Noble is a long-term supporter of Didcot Railway Centre, having led the parade at Didcot Christmas Street Fair in 2010.
Hundreds took to their bikes last weekend to raise thousands of pounds for a brain tumour charity. The Lark Rise bike ride, which returned on June the 9th, is inspired by the landscapes of Flora Thompson's Lark Rise to Candleford and started from Swallows Nursery in Mixbury. More than £5,000 has been raised for Brain Trust so far after 250 people took part. The charity's work enhances the lives of brain tumour patients and their families. Cycling event aimed to support Brain Trust's brain boxes, which provide relevant information and supportive tools, aiding patients in understanding their diagnosis and the treatment journey. The funds raised will also contribute to one-on-one coaching and other services the charity provides. Three categories of varying difficulties gave all participants a chance to challenge themselves and contribute to the charity. The options were a short route designed for families with young children, a medium route for older children and casual cyclists, and a longer route for more experienced cyclists. The longer route included a passage through the edge of the Silverstone racetrack and the landscape of the Stowe estate. The routes have been adjusted over time so that all those with a bike can choose a ride that will be a suitable challenge for their abilities. Chris Swallow, co-organiser of the event, said, After completing a road-based charity ride with my son, I realised how much safer a ride might be for families if all faster roads could be avoided. Together, with the help of my friend Ian Hicks, a keen rider and sadly passed on now, we devised a circular route which follows tracks and quiet lanes through much-loved local fields and estates. Initially, we supported Action Research. Then, after a few years, an article on the fantastic work of Brain Trust caught my eye, and on contacting the charity, we seemed to have an immediate rapport. It's a great day out, with drink stops on the way and hot food on offer back at the nursery. Will Jones, CEO of Brain Trust, added, "The dedication of the Lark Rise team and the local community is truly inspiring. The funds raised through this event have provided countless hours of coaching and hundreds of brain boxes directly benefiting brain tumour patients. We look forward to each event and extend our heartfelt thanks to everyone involved." The event organisers said the bike ride is a celebration of community, family and giving back, and that by participating, riders not only enjoy a beautiful journey through historic landscapes, but also support those battling a brain tumour. Five students from an Oxford school have represented Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Buckinghamshire in the finals of the National Reading Championship quiz. The competition, organised by the National Literacy Trust, tests students on their book knowledge. The Oxford Spires Academy students, Steph, Nathan, Kitty, Martha and Angus, came joint fourth in the competition that was held in London. After winning the regional heat in March, the team took on 21 other schools from across the UK in the final. Even though the final presented tougher questions than the heats, the Oxford Spires team scored almost full marks in two rounds in the second half. They were beaten only by a school rated outstanding by Ofsted, a selective grammar school and a private school. Head teacher at Oxford Spires, Louise Cowley, said, "This was a hard quiz and our students rose to the occasion, representing both Oxford Spires and our county admirably, fully deserving the trophy they received for winning their regional heat." Reading and literacy are the foundation of the education we offer at the school, and we are very proud to see our students taking part in competitions like this, which helped develop their personal voice and their confidence. The team said they will enjoy being joint fourth best in the country for literacy knowledge and go back next year with the aim of winning the top prize.
In a surprising turn of events, multi-billionaire gazillionaire Elon Musk has reviewed Jeremy Clarkson's Hawkstone beer. The former Top Gear host is famously a beer lover who created his very own lager, Hawkstone, using ingredients from his Diddley Squat farm in Oxfordshire. And now he's found a friend in Elon Musk of sorts. The 52-year-old owner of X, formerly known as Twitter, was seen drinking a bottle of Hawkstone on their official TikTok account. Musk can be seen sitting at quite a windy table. Bill Gates likely had the better spot before taking a sip. "As beer goes, that's great," one user replied. "How has this connection happened exactly?" Another perplexed fan commented, "Honestly, Elon Musk drinking a Hawkstone was not on my 2024 bingo card. Jeremy has said some not so nice things about Tesla." Over the years, Musk and Clarkson exchanged barbs through interviews and social media. In a 2018 interview with The Independent, Clarkson called Musk an idiot and claimed they almost had a fight. In response, Musk took to Twitter and called Clarkson weird and rude. In 2021, Clarkson asked about Musk's kids' unique names and suggested he call them John or Jane or whatever. When told that National Beer Day was on Sunday, June the 15th, Mr. Clarkson provided a humorous response to the news. A video was posted to Hawkstone's official Instagram account, which showed the Clarkson's farm star sitting and enjoying a glass of the beer. "Jeremy, you know it's National Beer Day," said the cameraman to the celebrity. "No, it isn't. It's National Beer Day every day," Clarkson joked. Series 3 of Clarkson's Farm was released last month on Prime Video, with 8 new episodes documenting life on the Oxfordshire farm.
A drop-in event is being held for residents to give their views on the plans to reopen the Cowley branch line. Two new stations, Oxford Littlemore near the Oxford Science Park and Oxford Cowley near ARC Oxford, will be developed if the plans go ahead. Under current proposals, the railway line will run through the Oxford Science Park and Oxford Business Park, connecting to the existing Oxford Parkway and Oxford Station, and will offer routes to Bicester and London, among other destinations. The planning assumption is for 2 trains per hour via Oxford Station through to London Marylebone Station. Currently, the line caters exclusively to freight services to BMW's Cowley manufacturing plant. Organisers would like to hear the public's views on the proposed passenger train services from the proposed stations at Littlemore and Cowley to Oxford city centre. A statement on Oxford City Council's website said, "The new rail stations would connect significant employment sites and residential areas to the city centre in less than 10 minutes, with the possibility of direct connections to Oxford Parkway, Bicester and beyond. This would help to improve the public transport options for journeys into and around the city, increasing overall capacity locally, reducing congestion on our roads, and contributing to a better rail network in Oxfordshire and the wider region." Network Rail estimates that more than 1 million journeys per year would be made using the new stations after only 3 years of operation. In addition to transforming journeys, reopening the Cowley branch line to passengers would support the sustainable development of new homes and commercial employment spaces already proposed near the stations. A local funding mix has been brought together to develop the full business case FBC for this project, including funding from ARC Oxford, the Oxford Science Park, Ellison Institute of Technology, Oxfordshire City Council and Oxford County Council. However, the delivery phase is still to be funded and there is a need for significant investment for the scheme to be delivered in the coming years. In April 2023, the City Council instructed Network Rail to start work on the FBC to produce cost estimates based on outline designs for the rail infrastructure. A £498,799 contract was awarded to SLC Rail in December 2023 to develop plans for walking, cycling and public transport connections to the stations from the surrounding areas. Concept design work on a potential pedestrian and cycle bridge linking Blackbird Leas and the Oxvale Retail Park started in late 2023.
Rory Stewart has dismissed rumours of standing to be an Oxford University Chancellor candidate, saying, "There are much better candidates than me." The ex-minister took to social media on Thursday to set the record straight. This comes as he was previously viewed as a front-runner for the position, with William Hill openly betting on Oxford's next chancellor in February, naming Mr. Stewart as the front runner. Speculation stirred after Lord Patten of Barnes, the former Conservative Party chairman, announced his intentions to retire from the role earlier this year, having held the position since March 2003. In a statement ruling himself out, Mr. Stewart said, "More election news when everyone's had enough. There's been talk of me as a candidate for Oxford Chancellor. There are much better candidates than me for Oxford. I won't be standing. Good luck to those who are. It's an amazing role." The former politician hosts the Rest is Politics podcast with former Labour Party spin doctor Alistair Campbell. He studied history and philosophy, politics and economics at Balliol College.
The tranquillity of a summer's evening was broken by the clash of sticks, the jangle of bells, and the furious wafting of handkerchiefs. As Morris sides go, Charlbury Morris is relatively new, having been established in 1984 by men of the town responding to a request for traditional entertainment at a local wedding. Ensham Morris, with which they danced alongside on their home turf, meanwhile, is a traditional Morris dancing team with a rich history. They have been active since the 19th century, although there were some breaks along the way. After restarting, they've now been dancing for more than 40 years. Their performances feature exciting and flamboyant dances, and they adhere to a distinctive Morris dancing style. Dances are accompanied by traditional folk tunes.
A house party event will be returning to Bicester next month for its second year. House Party Hugs will take place on Saturday, July the 6th at noon in Pioneer Square. The event is free for all to attend, with a turnout of approximately 200 people expected. It is described as the best soulful house party Bicester has ever seen. It will feature soulful house DJ, DJ G, who has played at the Oscars and the Golden Globes, as well as at the Monaco Grand Prix and the Monaco Yacht Show. He's also a regular at the Cowley Road Carnival and the Oxford Half Marathon. Gary DJ Smith said he is very excited to bring this event to Bicester for a second time.
Back in 1986, identical twins Lester and Jason Clark were so alike they even confused royalty. The late Queen Mother presented tankards inscribed with their names the wrong way round. Lester said, "She gave me Jason's prize tankard and him mine. It's the kind of mistake we were used to." The 20-year-olds, who lived at Headington, Oxford, were cornet players and shared the prize for the best musicians at the Royal Green Jacket School of Music at Shrewsbury. Their mother, Jill, told the Oxford Mail in 1986, "The commanding officer said he had given them the prize jointly because he couldn't find any difference in their musical ability." The Queen Mother said it was the first time she had presented a prize to identical twins. She was absolutely fascinated by them.
Oxford has had a drop in nitrogen dioxide pollution, with council data indicating low traffic neighbourhoods, the LTNs, and zero emission zone, the ZEZ, have had success. Data from Oxford City Council has found that during 2023, overall nitrogen dioxide, NO2, levels in Oxford decreased by 14% on average on 2022 levels and 33% on pre-pandemic 2019 levels. In Oxford, there are two annual mean targets for nitrogen dioxide, NO2, air pollution. The national legal limit, the concentration not to exceed 40 milligrams per M3, and Oxford's own voluntary low annual mean target for NO2 of 30 milligrams per M3. And many sites fell below both targets. The latest data reveals only two of 128 locations surpassed the national legal limit, with nine sites above Oxford's goal. Oxford was also in compliance with the UK's legal limit for NO2, in all areas of relevant exposure within the city, including places where the public is likely to spend time regularly, such as residential areas, the city centre, and areas with pedestrians. Why monitor air pollution? Nitrogen dioxide, NO2, is measured in micrograms in each cubic metre of air, micrograms stroke N3, with the World Health Organization, WHO, estimating that around 7 million deaths each year are linked with air pollution. Air pollution is now estimated to be competing with other major global health risks, such as an unhealthy diet and tobacco smoking. In 2021, the WHO published new guidelines which recommended stricter limits on the safe level of air pollution, including NO2 and PM2.5, particulate matter with a diameter less than 2.5 micrometres, advising that there is no level at which pollutants stop causing damage. Some of the highlights in the latest Oxford report include that the overall NO2 levels across the city have decreased by 14% on average compared with 2022 levels. This is a greater change than the 9% average reduction across the UK during 2023. Two locations of 128 local sites, which were found to be in breach of national restrictions, were both located in areas with limited public exposure, being busy roads away from residential or pedestrian areas. Headington Hill measured a concentration of 53 micrograms per M3, which, while still 32% above the southern bypass south of Botley interchange with another pollution hotspot, and measured a concentration of 42 milligrams per 8M3. The latter location is being managed by the Vale of White Horse District Council as part of their Air Quality Action Plan. Nine sites also exceeded Oxford's lower target for nitrogen dioxide, with St Aldate's, St Clement's, High Street, Holloway Road, Headington Hill, and three sites on Oxford Ring Road. This represents an improvement on 2022 figures when 18 sites were in breach.
An injured badger has been released back into the wild after being rescued from an Oxford shopping centre earlier this year, as the RSPCA calls for more support. The animal was rescued from the first floor of a shopping centre which had closed for refurbishment, with builders discovering the disorientated creature inside. The RSPCA said the badger, which was rescued earlier this year, was one of thousands of animals the charity assists each week. Now the charity is calling for Oxfordshire to do its bit as the RSPCA celebrates its 200th birthday amid new challenges for animals. In their 2023 birthday week of June 12 to 18 alone, the charity took 31,947 calls to assist animals in England and Wales. Some 38 of the incidents dealt with that week were in Oxfordshire, with the charity dealing with a total of 2,086 separate incidents across the county throughout 2023. The charity has been at the forefront of change throughout its history and has launched a new tool on its website to help people understand how they can help an animal in need as quickly as possible. The charity said animals were facing some of the biggest threats in our history, including the cost of living crisis, the growth of intensive farming, and climate change. RSPCA Chief Executive Chris Sherwood said, "Our birthday week was the busiest week of the whole year last year, and we're proud that, working with public, we are continue to help animals in Oxfordshire and across the country. But we know we can't do this alone, and the support of our friends in the animal welfare sector and the public is set to be more important than ever as we all look to work together to create a kinder, better world for all animals. To keep creating a better world for every animal, we need more people to take action. Sunday, June the 16th, marked 2 centuries since the Animal Welfare Organisation, then the SPCA, was founded at Old Slaughter's Coffee House in London by a London vicar, Arthur Broom, and 22 founding members, including the MPs William Wilberforce and Richard Martin. By 1840, Queen Victoria had given permission for the society to add Royal to its name, and this royal link was recently maintained with HRH King Charles III confirmed as the charity's new patron. Chris added, "We're so proud that in so many ways, animals' lives have changed beyond recognition over the last 2 centuries."
Children at a primary school in Oxford took part in a festival of dance earlier this week. On Wednesday, June the 19th, pupils at New Hinckley C of E Primary display their talent by performing traditional dances. Year 5 and 6 children in Kingfisher class performed a traditional maypole dance, while Year 1 and reception children in Puffin class did Morris dancing. They were taught a traditional Cotswold Morris dance, which originated in Headington, by one of the school's teaching assistants. Meanwhile, Owl's class, which is Year 2 children, did country dancing, which featured a do-si-do. All the dances were performed with live accordion and folk music and watched by parents, who the school said loved the show.
A former Oxford United star is teaming up with the local grassroots football team as they come together to celebrate Refugee Week. Oxford Phoenix was formed by charity Refugee Resource and Asylum Welcome, supported by Oxford United in the community. A Phoenix spokesperson said, "Since starting, the team has played a significant role in the players' lives, creating a sense of community, and has led to some players joining established football clubs in Oxfordshire." On Monday, June the 17th, former Oxford United striker James Constable ran a coaching session. June 17 to 23 is Refugee Week, with Refugee Day celebrated on June the 20th. Campaigners in a village near Wheatley are hoping they are one step nearer to the reopening of their local pub. The Bat and Ball is the only pub in the small village of Cuddeston, 5 miles southeast of Oxford. It was closed suddenly over a year ago, opened briefly this year, and is now up for sale. Nico King, one of the campaigners, said, "The whole village was shocked when the pub closed suddenly and without explanation. We'd lost a central part of our village life. We were then very worried that it would be yet another pub turned into a housing development. So we're relieved and excited that Ben Moss, who runs a very successful award-winning pub, The Lamb Inn, in nearby Little Milton, has come forward with an offer to buy it. Mr. Moss has joined several meetings in the village to talk about his plans to run the Bat and Ball as a family pub. At one meeting, residents voted overwhelmingly to support his bid. The village understands that Admiral Taverns, the current owners of the Bat and Ball, have accepted Mr. Moss's offer. Admiral have asked its solicitors to go ahead with the sale so that Mr. Moss can refurbish the pub and reopen as soon as possible in the winter." Mr. King added, "Last year, after the pub closed, we managed to register our pub as an asset of community value, helped by widespread support from our own and surrounding villages. This means that we could have triggered a 4-month moratorium to prepare a community bid for the pub. However, because Admiral have accepted Ben's offer, we decided that the best way forward is to support the sale. Our aim has always been to save the pub and only buy it if no one else came forward. We're very grateful to Ben and look forward to supporting him for many years to come." The Lamb Inn won praise last month from the local branch of the Campaign for Real Ale, Camera. It was named the Spring Pub of the Season. Staff celebrated with South Oxfordshire Camera representatives when they visited the pub near Tame. Camera branch chairman Graham Hard said at the time, "The Lamb Inn is a lovely Grade II listed 16th century thatched village pub with exposed beams providing old world charm, nestling in the glorious Oxfordshire countryside on the A329 between Stadhampton and Tame. As well as the welcoming and cosy interior, there is a large patio, courtyard area and a walled garden beyond that."
Brand new play equipment targeted at older children has been installed at a play area in a South Oxfordshire village. Uffington, just outside Wantage, welcomed the installation of two large new items of play equipment on the village's Jubilee Field. The additions have been funded by developer contributions, a grant from the White Horse Show Trust, and funds from the Parish Council. A new rope climbing frame known as a space net and a triple swing set will provide entertainment for local disabled and older children. Simon Jenkins, chairman of Uffington Parish Council, said, "The village is delighted to have been able to install these two new items of play equipment for older children, to complement those which have been available for some years for the younger ones. We are extremely grateful to the development of the Jack's Meadow Estate for the £106,000 contribution to the parish and to the White Horse Show Trust." Fenella Oberman, a parish councillor who led the project, said, "It was clear during our planning application consultation that local families were hugely supportive of this exciting project. We're delighted to be able to provide local children with this new equipment in time for summer and for many years to come." The parish council celebrated with a small event on June the 11th to mark the installation and thank those who contributed towards it. This addition is the latest to locally funded playgrounds across Oxfordshire, with a particular focus on revitalising the area in and around Wantage. Last month, a playground in Wantage reopened for the first time in 3 years, following a major £70,000 refurbishment. The Smith's Wharf play area was initially closed in March 2020 as part of the government-mandated lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic. After it shut, the play park was then registered to the Vale of Whitehorse District Council in October 2021, and works were planned to revitalise the area. After a £70,000 effort, the playground has been entirely redeveloped and the park was reopened on Monday, May the 13th. Long-time Wantage resident Rodley Tillotson at the time said, "A month or two ago, contractors appeared, made good the structural edge of the playground, critical because it's built on a slope, resurfaced it with a safe, soft material, and then just removed their fencing and left the playground safe and accessible. The next day, local families from new and old homes were using it, with evident pleasure for adults and children, and now there are more," he said. "So it's an eyesore restored and a valuable amenity for this corner of the town. Everyone I've spoken to is grateful."
A services consultancy to the utilities and infrastructure industry will open its new office this month, creating 50 new jobs in the Bicester area. Founded in Bicester in 2003, Dalcourt McLaren has grown its workforce to 475 full-time staff from its headquarters and opened new working spaces in 18 locations nationwide, including London, Bristol, Thetford, Crewe, Stirling and Ballymena in Northern Ireland. The ribbon on the new office was cut on Thursday, June the 13th, and will make it the company's second office in Bicester. The new office forms part of a long-term growth strategy in which Dalcourt McLaren intends to increase its workforce to meet the demand from the UK's utility and infrastructure sector with surveyors, project managers, environmental planners and GIS specialists being recruited. Its team specialised in providing end-to-end consultancy services to ensure smooth delivery of projects through land surveying, geomatics, environmental planning and property asset management. The new office will create a new hub for teamwork and collaboration at its Oxfordshire headquarters. The space has achieved an A+ rating and will be powered largely by solar panels with EV charging points installed. James Neal, CEO and founder of Dalcor McLaren, said creating new jobs and upscaling the company's operation will maintain the company's place as a leader in the services provided. Expanding our headquarters in Bicester is an important milestone and one we are especially proud of, given Oxfordshire is where Dalcor McLaren launched, said Mr. McNeil. The UK is undergoing a seismic shift in utility and infrastructure investment as part of a push to net zero because of climate change. Dalcor McLaren is at the forefront of this, helping clients deliver vital work for UK PLC. This new office will help us grow our team and support our ambitious growth plans. We are people-focused, so want to ensure we have the best environment for our team to keep on delivering our great work across the UK. Joanna Middleton, Head of Talent Acquisition at Dalcor McLaren, said, "As a business rooted in relationships and service excellence, our new space supports our mission to offer careers which accommodate all lifestyles while championing inclusivity and innovation." The Bicester Neighbourhood Policing Team paid a visit to two local primary schools last week. The visits were a chance for pupils to learn CPR and to learn more about the role of the police. On Friday, June the 7th, the Bicester Neighbourhood Team attended the summer fete of Fritwell Primary School near Bicester. Thames Valley Police Charwell said it was a great opportunity to meet so many parents and children and also take the chance to brush up on our CPR skills with little Annie. The day before, on Wednesday, June the 6th, PCSO Alison Drury from the Bicester Neighbourhood Policing Team dropped into Southwold Primary School in Bicester. She met the children from the nursery and reception classes to speak about the role of the police. Thames Valley Police Charwell said, "The children certainly kept her on her toes with some very interesting questions."
An odour coming from a landfill site has sparked an investigation into the smell, but it is warned it could take several months to clear. Following an investigation from the Environment Agency, it has been revealed that the odour being reported was coming from the FCC Environment landfill site between Appleford and Sutton Courtenay. The smell is coming from contaminated water in the operational area of the landfill site, which needs to be removed as a priority, said the Environment Agency. Last month, 130 reports were made about odour at the site. The Environment Agency has classified it as a significant odour incident and said it will ensure the FCC comply with their permit and resolve this situation as quickly as possible. It is expected that it could take several months until the contaminated water, being described as ponded leachate, is removed and the odour is controlled. An Environment Agency spokesperson said, "Our investigation has confirmed that the FCC landfill at Sutton Courtenay is the main source for the increase in odours being reported to us in recent months. Following our investigation on site, we have classified this as a significant odour incident, and we will ensure the operator, FCC, comply with their permit and resolve this situation as quickly as possible." the operator, FCC, have produced an action plan to remove the ponded leachate and prevent further spread. We will check progress and inspect the site weekly to ensure this issue is resolved urgently. To report an odour issue, call the Environment Agency Pollution Hotline on 0800 8070 60. That's 0800 8070 60. The Oxford Mail has approached the FCC for comment.
For most people, summer is all about going on holiday and then immediately planning the next getaway, writes Pete Green of the Oxford United Supporters Panel. It's similar for me, but my summers are always about football, in particular Oxford United. It might only be a few weeks since that emotional day when it felt like half of Oxfordshire was at Wembley to see Oxford get their long overdue promotion to the Championship. But, just like having the holiday of a lifetime, you soon get itchy feet and start planning for the next one. And so, planning begins with booking a season ticket to guarantee entry to every one of those games in the Championship next season. After 25 years of waiting, I don't want to risk the chance of missing watching my team in the Championship next year. There are some people who have sat in exactly the same seats since we moved into our current stadium and will only move seats when we hopefully move to our new stadium in a couple of years. They will be joined by people who they wouldn't have known all those years ago, but who have since become close friends through their shared love of Oxford United. Many will be buying season tickets for the first time, and whether they are going alone, with friends, or with a family, they will also soon be amazed at how welcoming everyone is, and it won't be long before a stranger is offering you a board suite or homemade cake if you're lucky. This year, there are so many great offers to support fans, with reduced prices for children, young adults and those who work for the emergency services with a blue light card. Did you also know that in the family stand, children under the age of 7 go free? Yes, free, for the whole season. Whether you are a lifelong fan or someone just beginning to get interested in the game, it's all about the players and who will become the next Wembley heroes. We have a great team, but nothing lasts forever, and players move on with others coming in to replace them. And this is the part that excites me the most. Who will be our next big signing? There will be rumours and gossip. Someone's mate in the pub will swear that they heard from someone linked to another club that a player is coming in or another is being sold. Reports will be shared of potential players or their lookalikes spotted around Oxfordshire. Even the club will tease new signings with slightly blurred training photos of a tattoo or distinctive haircut, leading to hundreds of Google searches. Oxford United have already made their first signing. Will Volks, who was the Supporters Player of the Year for Sheffield Wednesday last season. If that is the quality of player we are continuing to bring in, then this is going to be a very exciting summer and hopefully another fantastic season ahead. Just think, this time next year we might be preparing for the Premier League. Come on, you Yellows! Cox Manor Farm in Witney has been triumphant in an award ceremony. The tourist attraction has won the Oxfordshire Community and Voluntary Action, OCVA, Volunteer Organisation of the Year Award. Victoria Ellis, Cox's Volunteer Coordinator, shared the news from the OCVA Oxfordshire Community and Voluntary Action. She said, "The panel was thrilled to see a fantastic range of high-quality nominations, all of which told stories of the dedicated and passionate volunteers and volunteer organisations that Oxfordshire has. The panel loved reading the submission for COGS and looked forward to meeting representatives from the team in June. Categories for individuals were young volunteer under 25, long service volunteer, volunteer of the year, and Oxford Brookes student volunteer. For a charity or group, there is just one category, volunteer organisation of the year. General Manager Guy Reed said, "We're delighted to celebrate this award in Volunteers Week. Many thanks to all our volunteers for the incredible work they do."
A grand new estate house will come to Blenheim Park after a duke suggested the existing palace did not offer him enough privacy. Councillors at a West Oxfordshire District Council planning meeting granted permission for the home at First Platt, which will cover 1.79 hectares of land at the park in Woodstock near Blenheim Palace. There were no objections from consultees to the proposal, which planning agent Martin Lee described as a rarity owing to a three-year process of careful evolution of the design and a long period of consultation. Speaking out at the meeting, Liberal Democrat councillor David Jackson said, "When I first looked at this, I thought, oh, it's all right for some. They can just stick a house in there. When I got my brain in check, I realised I was being a bit silly. Obviously, the need has been established. I can't see how we can start saying this isn't appropriate for this planning site, given no heritage objections have been raised." The new estate will be built on former farmstead and woodland and will coincide with the conversion of the existing barn and outbuildings for ancillary use and the addition of new access routes to the outdoor pool. Proposed materials for the building are natural limestone for the walls and Cardinal Stonesfield slates for the roof with timber forming the windows. A planning application paper says the proposal would allow the heir to the dukedom to live within the park. While the 11th Duke lived in the palace, his successor and their heirs wished for more privacy and a more informal home. Consequently, both the current Duke and his heir, the Marquess of Blandford, currently live off-site. There are no suitable and readily available properties for the Marquess within the park, and First Platt has been identified through pre-application work as the most appropriate site in heritage terms for a new dwelling for this purpose. Green councillor Jenny Early asked what proportion of the year the family would be expected to be in the estate, and a planning officer said there was no restriction how long they can or cannot be in residence. Blenheim Park is a 224.3 hectare biological site of special scientific interest that is said to have some of the best areas of pasture and oak woodland in the country. Blenheim Palace is a country house and seat of the Dukes of Marlborough, which was originally called Blenheim Castle and is notable as the birthplace and ancestral home of Sir Winston Churchill.
Stéphane Negreu could leave Oxford United on a season-long loan, according to reports. The 21-year-old centre-back has been linked with a loan switch to Sky Bet League 2 side at Salford City. The Irish Mirror claims that United have agreed to send Negreu out on loan next season, with Salford leading the race to sign him. The Amis are, of course, managed by Carl Robinson, who was sacked as U's head coach in February 2023 after almost 5 years with the club. United have also received inquiries from Championship and League One clubs about a permanent move, the Irish Mirror has reported. Negreu joined the U's from League of Ireland Premier Division outfit Shelburne in January 2023 and was the penultimate permanent signing made under Robinson. The defender played twice at the end of the 2022-23 campaign and 19 times this season. 13 of his appearances this season were in League One, with 11 of those starts. However, he didn't play at all since starting in the 2-1 defeat at home to Leyton Orient on February the 24th.
The 8 stamps feature the Red Arrow's trademark red, white and blue trails in the sky. The iconic aerobics display team depict their performances above famous landmarks like the Eiffel Tower, the pyramids in Egypt and Niagara Falls. One of the world's premier aerobatic display teams was established in 1964. Their first display took place 7 months later. Ever since, the Red Arrows and their red-painted Nat Jet trainers became the showpiece of the RAF. The Red Arrows are based at RAF Waddington in Lincolnshire and had flown almost 5,000 displays in 57 countries by the beginning of 2024. Now in their 60th season and flying BAE Systems Hawks in display since 1980, the Red Arrows continue to demonstrate their teamwork and excellence around the globe. They are well recognised for their trademark Diamond 9 shape, as well as a combination of their close formations and precision flying. During important national celebrations, such as His Majesty's coronation and representing the UK globally, the Red Arrows have entertained us with spectacular displays of aeronautical excellence. David Gold, Royal Mail's Director of External Affairs and Policy, commented. Mr. Gold continued, "We are proud to mark their 60th season with these striking new stamps." Squadron Leader John Bond, team leader of the Royal Air Force aerobatic team for 2024 and flying as Red One, said, "This milestone season underscores the excellence, dedication and pride of all of those who've worked for, supported or just simply watched a show by the Royal Air Force aerobatic team across the last 60 seasons. As well as celebrating this heritage, these new stamps, many of which feature brilliant images taken by skilled RAF personnel, will hopefully inspire many more people using the wonder of aviation, just like each of our colourful dynamic displays." The stamps and a range of collectible products are available from June the 20th.
Oxford City Council has denied it is dictating house building outside its boundaries, as it is accused of being wrong and told to sort yourselves out. The authority is receiving scrutiny for its local plan, which sets out its vision to build more affordable homes, tackle the climate emergency, and make Oxford's economy work for all residents. Officers have sat down with representatives from the Vale of the White Horse, South Oxfordshire and West Oxfordshire districts, who are in the process of challenging a first draft of the City Council's Local Plan 2040, which seeks to offload its demand for housing on neighbouring districts. A spokesman for the City Council has said, "Our calculations are not arbitrary, and the authority is not trying to dictate housing numbers or where homes need to be built outside the city." But Director of CPRE, Campaign to Protect Rural England, Helen Marshall, said, "We recognise that the City Council is committed to trying to find affordable housing solutions for its residents and to supporting the world-class education and research offered by our universities. However, this must not come at the expense of Oxfordshire's environment, in which in fact underpins the health and well-being of both residents and the economy." They added, "Sort yourselves out is the message for Oxford City and raise questions about transport." Rose Hill and Iffley Ward Councillor David Henwood, who is an MP candidate for Oxford West, also raised the question of the problem of connectivity. The Independent Oxford Alliance representative said, "If these developments are passed, the only way in which they can pass is if there is connectivity in them to where the jobs are. The Oxford plan, in my view, is failing in that regard. It offers no potential employment sites. Because of poor connectivity into Oxford, I can't see how any authority can approve this." A spokesman for the South Oxfordshire and Vale of Wight Horse District Councils said, "We are currently making representations to the examination in public of the Oxford City Council local plan. We are stating our case that the City Council's method for calculating housing need is wrong, along with raising other concerns with their plan." An Oxford City Council spokesman says another 2,289 homes will need to be built on top of current plans, 115 extra homes a year until 2040 across Oxfordshire. He added, "The context fueling the need for more homes is Oxfordshire's strong and diverse economy. This is forecast to keep growing, even during a prolonged period of economic volatility. The local plan's policies include requiring all new homes and businesses to be zero carbon in operation and requiring developments of 10 or more homes to provide at least 40% of affordable housing. Charwell District Council and West Oxfordshire District Council have been approached for comment."
Oxford hockey star Miriam Pritchard has a new sketchbook at the ready if she needs to get away from it all at her first Olympic Games. One of six debutants, Pritchard has been named as Team GB's goalkeeper in the 16-strong women's squad for Paris 2024. The 25-year-old is also an award-winning illustrator. Pritchard won the site-specific category at the 2021 World Illustration Awards for her illustrations that celebrate the diversity of Loughborough, a city in which she studied. "It's something I love to have alongside my hockey," said Pritchard. "It's something completely different, two sides of my personality. Even on camps, it's nice to have that switch off and not be constantly thinking about hockey. I can go out, I can draw, and it makes me a much happier person. I've just bought a new sketchbook, so I'm planning to take it to Paris and do as much drawing as I can." Pritchard, whose grandfather and father are both artists, won the award for a series of bathroom murals in the Public and Plants coffee shop in Loughborough. She said, "I'd like to do more illustration in public places. If my work brings a smile to one person's face, it's a good thing." Pritchard was playing for a club's second team when she first broke into the GB programme at Bisham Abbey. She spent a lot of time as a reserve in recent years, behind the established number ones, Maddie Hinch and Savvy Heesh. "I've had to work my way into both the club scene and the international scene," said Pritchard. "A lot of goalkeeping spent on the bench, being patient, waiting your turn, but also working as hard as you can to get better and better. The last 3 years in particular have been really difficult in that respect, but it's work out, I suppose. All the hard work, all of the dreaming and all of the hours of training." Pritchard is one of over 1,000 elite athletes on UK Sports' National Lottery funded world-class programme, allowing them to train full-time, have access to the world's best coaches and benefit from pioneering medical support. This is vital for her pathway to the Paris 2024 Games. Team GB's last female goalkeeper at the Olympics was Maddie Hinch at Tokyo 2020, who had a big influence on Pritchard's decision to pursue the position. "What Maddie did for goalkeeping was huge. She made it cool," said Pritchard. "She was a huge inspiration for me. It's about standing on her shoulders, not in her shadow." Heesh, a reserve in Tokyo, looks set to start between the sticks in Paris, but a cruelly timed injury means Pritchard will be on Team GB's number one in the French capital. Pritchard said, "I love subs and her journey has not been easy. She has put in so much hard work and sat on the bench for a long time. Obviously, I'm pleased to be selected and very happy to be part of Team GB and going to the games, but part of me would be playing for her."
From Memory Lane, 1968. Our story about Girl Guides being voted the most cheerful in England reminded one reader of another successful challenge. He or she remembered another group from the same village, Kidlington, who completed a 104-mile walk just for fun. The Rangers and Girl Guides walked from Teddington Lock in Middlesex to Folly Bridge in Oxford. Their leaders and an Oxford male photographer were there to greet them when they arrived at their expected time of 5 p.m. in April 1968. The girls had walked an average of 20 miles a day, sleeping in village halls and barns on the way. Eileen Perrin, who had just become leader of the newly formed Kidlington Rangers and of the 2nd Kidlington Girl Guide, said, "We did it for fun and the fresh air." The Rangers were Christine Weller, Pauline Blake, Hilary Belcher, Susan Skeynes and Kim Bowsher, and the guides were Gillian Rivers and Leslie Broadbent. Our earlier story, Memory Lane, April 15th, revealed how 6 guides in Kidlington Thrush Patrol had become the most cheerful in England in 1970. They won the competition at division level, area level and regional level, then heard they had become national champions. They had cheered up a person, a place and themselves to earn the accolade. There is still a strong girl guiding presence in Kidlington. There are more than 170 girls and 40 volunteers who meet at the guide centre in the heart of Kidlington. There are 11 different units who meet across every day of the week. They are part of Girl Guiding Oxford City 2 Division in Oxfordshire County, which is part of Anglia Region.
Approval has been granted for a new Tesco Express supermarket on a city road by a major housing development. Oxford City Council has made the decision to grant permission for the planned store at Barton Fields Road in Headington at a licensing meeting on Monday, June the 17th. The newly granted licence will allow the sale of alcohol for consumption off the premises from Sunday to Saturday from 6 a.m. to midnight and late-night refreshment Sunday to Saturday between 11 p.m. and midnight. Opening hours would be Sunday to Saturday from 6 a.m. to midnight. Some objection has been raised to the Tesco Express application in relation to licensing conditions. One objector, Julia Orlando, said, "I would like to express my concerns with both the selling of alcohol in the late hours and the opening times of the Tesco that will be allocated in front of our house. We are in a residential area, and while it would be great to have a shop, I'm afraid that this will drive unsocial behaviour on our doorsteps. Compared to shops in nearby Barton, it will be opened until later, driving anyone in need of a drink to the front of our house. The Tesco Express, located in Headington on a main road, is not in front of people's houses, has a more limited opening times than the one proposed here. I would like to strongly oppose to the opening times too. A 6 a.m. opening will bring noise at a very early times, which will inevitably interfere with our sleep, as our bedroom is located on that side of the road."
A blue plaque has been unveiled to jointly honour the father of animal ecology, Charles Elton, FRS, and his wife, E.J. Scovell, a distinguished poet. The Oxfordshire Blue Plaques Board revealed the honour for the descendants of the friends of the couple at 61 Parktown, Oxford. Charles Sutherland Elton, 1900 to 1991, was a zoologist who sought to enhance the scientific basis for the study of animal behaviour. The board said in the process he changed natural history into ecology, the quantitative and experimental study of living organisms in relation to their environments. He spent his whole career at Oxford University. Edith Joy Scovell was a distinguished poet and wrote verse from her time as an undergraduate at Somerville up to her later years. The impressive couple married in 1937, and from 1949 they lived at 61 Parktown, where Charles tended the community gardens and where the plaque now honours their contributions. In honouring Charles, the board said, his work popularised notions like food chain and later ecosystem. They said, he began his research during pioneering expeditions to Spitsbergen in the 1920s, where he investigated the life cycles of small mammal populations under Arctic conditions. His seminal survey of animal ecology, 1927, created a new field, and in 1932 he became the first editor of a journal of animal ecology and established at Oxford a Bureau of Animal Population. From 1949, Elton then helped to found and sustain Nature Conservancy, the first official body to promote the cause of British wildlife. He believed conservation should mean the keeping or putting in the landscape of the greatest possible ecological variety. By the 1940s, Elton's local base was Whiteham Woods, where he set up the first long-term research projects, and his field diaries from that period, recently made available online, are a key source for the history of ecology as well as models of meticulous observation. Elton was elected FRS in 1953, where he received the Society's Darwin Medal in 1970, and four animals now bear his name, a small Chironomid, a male spider, a small white Chiroid worm, and a tropical forest Trombiculid mite. Scoville's first collection, Shadows of Chrysanthemums, was published in 1944, followed by three other collections at considerable intervals. She accompanied her husband to Central and South America and the West Indies as a recorder and field researcher, and many of her poems detail the natural world. She received the Distinguished Colomelody Award for poetry in late recognition of her achievement.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.